right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And so I want to thank State Senator Chris Larson for you know, once again appearing on the show and just, you know, just doing a great job of telling the truth. And then my next guest, it's Tuesday. That means Dr. Michael Rosen. Dr. Professor Michael Rosen is in the studio, and I'm glad to see him as always. Good morning to you, Dr. Rosen. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Earl. Good to see you. It's a beautiful fall day.
Yeah, you know, it's, look, man, if there wasn't a bare-knuckle brawler like you, I need help. You know, we really are up against a fight, Dr. Rosen, in this country. And you've been around a while, you know the history of the country, but we're in a battle in this country. And it's easy to talk about the battle and the threats outside of our nation, Dr. Rosen, but inside of our nation, there's a battle that we must win, because if we don't win it, you know, you keep hearing people say, well, democracy is at stake. Democracy is at stake. Hey, Dr. Rosen, it is, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is an existential threat to our democratic republic. We see it with the fact that not only was the election of Joe Biden challenged, not only was there a insurrection, a violent attack that injured 140 state, 140 Capitol Police in an attempt to overturn that election. But since then, people like Robin Voss, who hired Gableman, who admitted, former Supreme Court Justice Gableman, who admitted he knew little about elections, but learned, I guess, most of what he knows about elections from Mike the Pillow Guy.
$1 million thrown away.
And what they've been doing is propagating the myth that the election was stolen, to the extent that now over 300 Republican candidates around the country are running for various levels of positions, including positions where they would be responsible for certifying future elections, over 300 candidates who claim the election was stolen, despite the fact that all the investigations that have taken place, all of the charges that have taken place, have been found to be false. That this was one of the safest, most secure elections in the history of the country. But now you have the Republican candidate in Arizona is saying that if she doesn't win, she knows the election's stolen. You have Tim Michaels in Wisconsin saying that he's not sure, that if he doesn't win, that there has to be something fishy with the election, and who has said that he's not sure that the election in 2020 was legitimate. These people are consciously undermining the will of the voters and our democratic processes, and it's a very dangerous time. It's a very dangerous time in this country.
You know, Ron Johnson, another. Dr. Rosen, it's 2 years ago, and yet these people are still saying, I believe, I feel like it was stolen. Why are we reacting to what somebody says they feel like?
Well,
I mean, that's the part of this, Dr. Rosen, that I don't get. No. It's been proven that they're lying, that they don't know that what they're talking about is not true. But I still feel that way. Why should we have to respond to how they feel?
Well, we shouldn't, but
we are.
We're not responding to how they, I disagree that we're responding to how they feel. What we're responding to is that there are people in power, Mitch McConnell, for example, or Kevin McCarthy, for example, who know that, and said initially that the election was legitimate, but because of Donald Trump's sway over the Republican base and his influence and their belief that the election was stolen, that people in power in the Republican Party, people who may actually control the United States Congress in a few months, they are pandering to that base because that base has been convinced, despite the facts, has been convinced by Trump and the Trump-oriented media that the election was stolen. That's why it's not someone's feeling. It's that people in power are propagating this myth. It's dangerous because we've seen what happens in countries where myths get propagated, whether it was in fascist Germany, where the depression and the economic plight of Germans was blamed on a Jewish people, and we ended up with the Holocaust, or whether we see in a place like Hungary, where Viktor Orban has essentially scapegoated immigrants fleeing places like Syria, and has stripped the country of its democratic rights and established essentially an authoritarian government. So we've seen this happen before, and it shouldn't surprise us. I had a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison when I went there many years ago, named George Mossy, who was a refugee from Nazi Germany, who discussed his experience with the mass mobilization of hatred that he experienced in Germany, and we are seeing a very similar thing in this country today.
You know, Dr. Rosen, that hatred that you just echoed, it's there for everyone to see. It's not hidden anymore. And it's out in the open. And people, the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers,
yeah,
these people walk around in broad daylight brandishing their military armament and weapons. And somehow are looked at as patriots.
Yeah, well, they're not patriots. They're traitors. The United States is premised. I mean, the Declaration of Independence was very clear that we want a country that is self-governed and that it is based on the notion that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, we know that when the country was established, there was a slaveocracy in the South, but the fact that we established a country based on those principles, and have tried to live up to those principles so that we have expanded those rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness to groups that in the past, whether they were slaves of African descent or whether they were
Native Americans.
Indians who didn't get the right to vote until the 40s,
yeah,
or whether they were women who didn't get the right to vote until the early part of the 20th century. What we have done is taken that commitment that all men are created equal and gradually expanded it. The beauty of this country is that we are a country that, as opposed to previous countries, where the assumption was some men are born to rule and others are born to be ruled. In other words, there were kings, there were monarchs, and there were subjects whose entire life and purpose was to toll, to serve that higher power, the church and the monarchy. In the United States, we said no. We overthrew King George and the Church of England, and we are not going to be subjects to a higher power, but we will be a country of self-government where all people have equal rights, and we establish a government to defend and advance those rights.
Is that under threat today?
Yes. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. Even when people say that we want to, like Tucker Carlson, that we want to establish a Christian nationalist government, we are a multicultural democracy. One of the principles of this country is the separation of church and state. If you look at the countries around the world, Iran is a classic example, where you have a theocracy, where you have a government that is run by the religion. It is a repressive government. The same problem exists in Israel, where you have a theocracy essentially running the country, and where you have and in this country there are people
that are pushing for that right now.
Who are pushing for that?
Right.
That is antithetical to what the founding fathers wanted, to what people who served in uniform in this country fought for, which was to defend a multicultural democracy where church and state are separated. Everyone should have the right to worship the God of their choice in the church or synagogue or mosque of their choice, or not worship. But they all have equal rights in the political realm.
You know, Dr. Rosen, you laid it out so well. But that is under threat.
Yes, it is.
And there are people who push back against it. We've got some. Our phone line's open at 844-967-2789. My guest is Dr. Professor Michael Rosen. Paul, I see you. And others. We got a little break. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Dr. Professor Michael Rosen. Let's go to the phone lines and Paul from Waukesha. Hey, good morning, Paul. How you doing? Thank you for the call. You say what?
Hello.
Yeah, Paul, good morning. You say what, sir?
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm all right. You got to turn your radio down.
Oh, yeah, I got it. Hold on, let me get out of there.
Yeah, that's what's going on. You get feedback.
All right, we got it. Do you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Now, this, I don't know which point to start on first. The Christian theocracy that the country that you guys are claiming that the country is heading to, I'm not seeing it, and I don't know where you're getting this from. I don't know where you're getting that one from. I'm not a deeply religious person. Whatever your religious views are, religion to me is a personal thing.
Right.
Yeah, separation of church and state. That I 100% believe in. The 2020 election, I'm sorry if I'm going to say it, there were a lot of inconsistencies in that election. I received 3 mail-in ballots that I did not request. If I'm going to vote, I'm old-fashioned. I go to the place where you vote. I fill out the ballot and vote. I never requested a mail-in ballot.
Hey, Paul,
ballot.
Do you think that was the exception or the rule? What do you think?
Do you think I'm the exception of the rule?
No, do you think that if you say you got 3 ballots that was the exception or the rule that happened all over the country?
I said, Matt, how did you get... How do you get mail-in ballots when you don't request them?
There have been 62 investigations, nonpartisan investigations of the election, and all of them found that this election was secure. So you may have a... research it.
In 2016, we went through Russian collusion. That was proven false. Over and over again, and everybody knew that was false.
Well,
I went through the last 6 years of Trump, Russia, Putin. Now we're in a proxy war in the Ukraine. Explain that one to me.
Russian interference in the election has been documented by the CIA and the National Security Council.
It has been.
Okay, Paul.
I'm glad that
you agree with church and separation of church and state. And as far as Christian nationalism, people like Tucker Carlson, Orban in Hungary, Donald Trump have all said that we should become a Christian nationalist country. That's where that comes from. So I don't know where
I don't know where you're saying that. Once again, the Democrats, the left have a history of putting words in people's mouths.
Paul, I'm giving you on this radio show. Paul, the words of the objective of being a Christian nationalist country come from people like Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's a congresswoman from Georgia. She claims to be a Christian nationalist. Tucker Carlson, who is the most popular TV host on Fox News, says we should become a Christian nationalist country at one of the major...
I've never heard him preach the Bible. I've never heard recite the Bible.
Christian.
How can you be a Christian that down?
You can't argue with you if you're going to deny the facts.
Hey, Paul, thank you very much for the call. I really appreciate it. Let's go to Bill from Oconomowoc. Hey, Bill, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
As usual, a great show. Oh, boy, I tell you what, you guys get a lot done. I really appreciate when these people who don't agree with you call in. But one thing we have to understand, you can't be a victim of our country. If you want to be, then you have to understand what you're doing. You don't like the CIA. You don't like the FBI. You don't like the Pentagon. You don't like the Joint Chiefs. You don't like all those people because when the truth comes out on all that stuff that he mentioned, they didn't like what was said because Tucker Carlson and Fox News had more power on them than our country. So you decide, do I want democracy or do I want something else? They don't want democracy. They don't like it, and now they're victims of it. But in educating them, you have to ask them, well, what did Trump get accomplished, and what is so much better now because of Trump? What is the lasting implication that Trump had on this country? Now, we know he had to do something, well, I'm not quite sure what it is, but I'm not making fun either. Help me out. Educate me. Tell me how he made a lasting change in this country that they want to come back to, because we did have a series of riots and this city's burning when he poured out his mantra. Now, I want to know, how did that build a better country and make America great? Tell me how America's great, because Trump's here, and let's not talk about Biden, because Biden has had made mistakes, but he still believes in democracy, and democracy's the issue. We can't argue about it. We have to learn how to work together.
Hey, Bill, well said.
So the main accomplishment of the Trump administration was a tax cut, the largest in the history of the country, over $2 trillion, went almost exclusively. It was a corporate tax cut and then extended by Senator Johnson to ensure that people, his financial supporters, businessmen and women got this tax cut. That tax cut was the major driver for an increase in the deficit by over $2 trillion that took place under Donald Trump. But that was his major accomplishment. It was his only accomplishment. Remember, when he got elected, he promised that he was going to do an infrastructure plan. That didn't happen. So the only legislative accomplishment of the Trump administration was that. He botched the COVID thing, and that's come out in recent documents from the Center for Disease Control.
All right, Doc, we got to go to a break.
Okay.
844-967. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Dr. Professor Michael Rosen. And Dr. Rosen, you wanted to talk about Ron Johnson's position on Social Security.
So, Ron Johnson, as a candidate, is either severely misinformed about Social Security, or he's being dishonest about it. I don't know. I don't know which it is, but it's one of the two. And let me explain why. This August, he proposed moving Social Security into the federal government's discretionary budget. He claims that that will help improve it. But here's what it really means. Congress would have to authorize Social Security spending and its annual automatic cost of living increases each and every year. Every senior citizen's Social Security check, as well as the programs for disabled Americans, would be left to the whims of the millionaires who dominate our dysfunctional Congress. Moreover, Johnson wants to do the same with Medicare. And it's not only Johnson, by the way. The Republican Party's official position is that Social Security should be evaluated every 5 years. Johnson's is every year by making it discretionary. Why would Johnson or the Republican Party want to mess with our successful 87-year-old social insurance program that provides most older Americans with a majority of their income? Johnson gives two reasons. First, every time he mentions Social Security, and he did this when he was debating Mandela Barnes, he rails against the federal budget deficits as if Social Security is contributing to them. It's a lie. By law, Social Security cannot contribute to the federal deficit because it is required to pay benefits only from its trust fund, which are financed by the dedicated payroll tax of 12.4%, split evenly between employees and employers. Rather than running a deficit currently, the trust fund has a reserve fund or surplus of $2.85 trillion. Conveniently left out of Johnson's attempt to scapegoat Social Security is the fact that he has repeatedly voted to increase the very federal budget deficits he rails against. He voted for President Trump's $2.2 trillion tax cut. These cuts, especially the sharp reduction in the corporate tax rate to 21% from 35%, took a huge bite out of federal revenue. And of course, when the veterans bill, veterans who had been burned in fire pits, toxic burn pits, bill came up. Johnson originally even opposed that, only changing his vote after a huge public outcry. So Johnson has been a hypocrite on this deficit issue. The other claim that he makes is that his goal is to save Social Security, but making it discretionary won't save it. It only means that it has to be
cut,
appropriated every year, and you can be sure that at some point it would be cut by once the Republicans controlled Congress. Now, the other is that it's set up wrong. He said it should be invested in the stock market. Well, Social Security recipients wouldn't be getting an 8.7% cost of living increase right now, if it was based on the stock market, they'd be getting a decrease in their Social Security. It's not an investment program. Social Security was set up as social insurance to guarantee that people in the golden years of their lives had a stable source of income. If Johnson really wants to save it, and this will be my final point, all he's got to do is increase the cap. Currently, there's a cap. You pay, employers and employees pay Social Security only on $147,000 a year. If you raise that to $200,000, voila, Social Security is solvent well into the next century.
You know, Dr. Rosen, let's go to the phone lines. Hey, Tom, thank you for hanging on. I really appreciate it. You say what?
Yeah, I completely agree with the guest. And he's doing God's work, actually. I mean, great work. Number one, I would be asking these people, what is their definition of a Christian? Because I don't think any of these people know. I think they're Christian name only, because really and truly, Jesus wouldn't care what religion it is that you practiced. And number two, Paul's a liar. He's a liar. He can just call up a radio show and say he got 3 absentee ballots. He probably got 3 pieces of mailers that look like absentee ballots. And he's probably saying, oh, yeah, I got 3 absentee ballots, because that way it follows his
narrative,
identity, or his narrative, exactly, narrative of what's going on. So the people that have actually been accused of any type of voter fraud have been Republicans, and it's been Republican Congress people, in fact. So, you know, let's stop with this whole craziness about, you know, voter fraud. We do have election fraud with cross-check and things like that, but we do not have voter fraud in this country. In fact, we have a hard time getting people to vote once. So, you know, give me a break.
So Social Security.
Ron Johnson shows where he stands on Social Security, and he shows where he stands on all of the different social safety net programs. Just look at his votes. His votes are there to see. You went through the votes.
I went through the votes, yeah.
You go through them every day.
I'm going to go through them again tomorrow.
It's right there. It is right there. Just all you got to do is read his voting record and what he voted against, and it's been all against we, the people. It has not been for the people at all. It's been for the corporations and his donors. Thank you very much. But like I said, when people say that they're Christian, I would say, what's your definition of Christian? Because that's not the Christ I know. I know it doesn't matter in terms of that, but in terms of, you know, we're not a Christian, Judeo-Christian, you know, country or whatever. But at the same time, ask them, what's your definition of Christian?
Right.
Because they definitely don't know. Thank you.
Hey, Tom, thank you for holding, man. Thank you very much for the information. You know, Dr. Rosen, same thing again. The people who are voting for Ron Johnson, the people who are voting for Ron Johnson, average people, average citizens, Dr. Rosen, who are going to be relying on Social Security, who rely on it now.
Yeah. Well, I
don't understand what it is he's talking about, and they may vote for him. Because he clearly stated that he's trying to save it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the unfortunate things is that in the country is that it's become so polarized that people kind of are in their own tribes.
Right.
And they don't base their political opinions based on facts and information and nonpartisan, unbiased information. Instead, so when Ron Johnson says that he wants to save Social Security, people say, well, Ron Johnson, I believe him. He's a good Christian
right.
man. He's a good human being, and he wants to save it. But there is no reason, if you are concerned about it, there's no reason to move it to discretionary. I think we've talked about this on this program before, but if you look at the federal budget, only 30% of the budget is discretionary. Half of that is national defense or military spending. So only 15% of the whole budget is discretionary. And Ron Johnson keeps saying we need to cut unnecessary spending. So what he's talking about cutting spending, he's talking about veteran benefits. That's discretionary. He's talking about federal aid to education. That's discretionary. He's talking about certain medical care programs. That's that's discretionary. Transportation, the environment, all of those are the discretionary federal, and they're a small piece of the federal budget. The only reason to move Social Security, which is a big piece of the federal budget, but it's non-discretionary, it has to be paid. If you're eligible, if you've paid in, your employer's paid in, you've worked those years, you're guaranteed that income, it's like a federal pension, then the only reason to move it to discretionary would be to cut it. There's no other reason that you would put it on that side, because every area of discretionary spending has to be reappropriated every year federally. And national defense is dealt with as it's non-discretionary. So moving Social Security into that, for people who are concerned about what they call excessive federal spending, means that Social Security would then be moved into that column and be ripe for cutting.
Let's bring Don up. Good morning, Don. How you doing, man? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Good morning, Earl. Hey, great guest. I just want to throw my two cents in here. You're speaking of that snake in the grass, Ron Johnson. I want to refresh your memory. This summer we had Juneteenth Day, and we had a lot of dignitaries down there. Tony Evers was there, and I guess Ron Johnson speech there. I mean, this man, he wants to take your, not only your safety net away, he can't even give you a holiday. He votes against that, and that was voted unanimously. And then he says afterwards, when he was booed, that's what you get when you're being nice to people. How do you figure that's being nice to people? So I just thought I'd throw that in there.
Hey, Don, thank you very much for the call, as always.
You bet,
really appreciate it. You know, Dr. Rosen, the discretionary part of the budget is like a life raft to the American people. It really is. And so when you talk about cutting that, in many instances, it's the safety net.
Yes. I mean, the things like food stamps,
right,
are in the discretionary section of the budget. TANF, which is...
Rent assistance.
Right.
The kinds of things...
Housing, housing money, so, vouchers, et cetera. Those are all in the discretionary budget. And we know what happened when, under President Reagan, who increased the military budget, he tripled the national debt. Even though when he came into office, he said he was going to balance the budget. But he cut discretionary spending by 13%. We know that if, and it's very likely that the Republicans are going to get control of Congress in this next election. And if that's the case, with people like Ron Johnson, who are saying we have to cut spending to get the deficit under control. And remember, what increased the deficit are these tax cuts. That means the government saying, don't give us the revenue, we're not going to take it. And that and as a result, a $2.2 trillion tax cut that went overwhelmingly to the richest people in this country. And that increases the deficit, because that money that should have been coming in is not coming in, and it's instead going, it's being privatized, it's going into staying in people's pockets, and therefore it increases the deficit, and then they turn around and say, okay, so let's cut the programs that help poor and working and middle class people. As an educator, this, the impact of this nationally on higher education, has been devastating, because in the 1950s and 60s, public support for higher education was so strong that while it wasn't free in all places, it was free in California, but it wasn't free in all places, tuition was so low that poor and working class people could send their kids to college. Today, the cost of college is so great because states and the federal government have cut back on their support for higher education that The way the colleges and universities have compensated is by increasing tuition.
You know, Dr. Rosen, you made me think about why it is so critical that these Republicans don't regain control of Congress, because with deficits, they will be cutting discretionary spending.
Yeah, and they created the deficit.
Yes. Listen, we got to go to break, so hold the thought. 844-967-2789. We'll be back. You're so right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Dr. Professor Michael Rosen. And you know, Dr. Rosen, we always hear people say, this is an important election. This is one of the most important elections. And you know what? This is one of the most important elections, because as you and I were talking off the air, let's say a scenario that the Republicans regain control of the House and the Senate. Let's say they do that and Joe Biden remains the president. What is the first thing they're going to do?
Well, what they always do, because they only have one policy idea, is they'll cut taxes of high-income people. Beginning with the Reagan administration, they came in with the idea of supply-side economics, that if you cut the taxes of corporations and the wealthy, those tax cuts will more than pay for themselves by generating such robust economic activity that the revenue that the government is foregoing in the tax cuts will be replaced by increased tax revenues because of the robust economic activity. It didn't take place under Reagan. In fact, the national debt tripled because of those tax cuts. Also, a big increase in military spending. But those tax cuts were a major driver. The fact is that it has been demonstrated over and over and over again that if you cut the revenue, if you cut taxes, it does not, the economic activity that it generates, if it generates any, is negligible, and it does not generate the robust economic activity to replace that revenue. So either then you end up having larger deficit spending, or if you have deficit hawks, and if the Republicans are in control of Congress, they will definitely be deficit hawks. They will cut the discretionary sections of the budget. That means social services. That means veterans benefits. That means housing, the environment, all of the areas, I think, that matter a lot to the American people. But that's the only idea Republicans have had. At the state level, we see it, and at the federal level, we've seen it. Nobel Prize-winning economist Paul Krugman calls it a zombie idea, because it's been disproven and should have been buried a long time ago, but it keeps reemerging because it's the only idea that the Republican Party really promotes, is cutting the taxes of corporations and the wealthy.
You know, Dr. Rosen, it's because they keep drumming back. What's the guy's name that that created the contract on America?
Newt Gingrich.
Yeah. Because people like that, decades pass, and they keep coming back up to the surface. And so there was a time when, you know, Newt Gingrich's name was just out of the picture. Now, Newt Gingrich is now a leader once again in the Republican Party.
Yeah.
After decades of people casting him, asunder.
Yeah, one of the reasons that the Republican Party has been so effective is that it has been an advocate for the interests of the billionaire class in this country. And that billionaire class, one of the things that it did in the early 1970s is it began to set up a series of foundations and think tanks, like the Heritage Foundation,
like the
Cato Foundation, later in Wisconsin in the 80s, the Bradley Foundation.
Right.
And these foundations, when elected officials get voted out of office or they retire, they put them on their staff, keep at highly compensated, and keep them churning out position papers and active in the political arena. So they've created a very well-financed system that is both a retirement home for former officials, as well as a very lucrative place for young academics and political partisans to get finance to promote these zombie ideas, these in many ways anti-American ideas. You know, I mean, one of them was Charles Murray, and the Bradley Foundation gave him $1 million to write a book called The Bell Curve. If anybody, that Bell Curve book essentially said that black people were genetically inferior to white people and to Asian people.
And got a lot of traction.
Absolutely. It was a national book, and it essentially resurrected the idea of eugenics, which was a very prominent theory in this country in the 1920s.
So Dr. Rosen, and this is what frustrates me, I always wonder how Republicans, you know, have all the billionaires and you know, where the Democrat billionaires and why are the Democrats, have they not prepared the same way to push back and fight these people? And why are the Democrats always lagging behind when it comes to this kind of political
I mean, I think the thing
chess match.
Well, one is that Democrats generally, the Democratic Party, first of all, one thing I should say is not all Republicans are in this vein.
Right.
A lot of Republicans, including many in Wisconsin, have deserted the Republican Party as it's become such an extreme party. But to your question, the reason is that many more billionaires are financing what they call conservative, what I would call reactionary ideas, opposition to Social Security, promotion of tax cuts for the wealthy, opposition to funding public education. These are ideas that overwhelmingly the billionaire class in this country
benefit them.
Have opposed. They don't want, they don't need public education because they send their kids to private schools. They don't need food stamps or low-income housing because they have several mansions, like Mitt Romney with his seven houses. So Democrats don't have that kind of money. Now, one countervailing force that existed was the labor unions, where workers represented people would pool their money, and then the unions would contribute to think tanks or to political campaigns. And the Republican Party has made the unions a target for at least 50 years.
So how do we ever balance this out? Is there any way possible? Otherwise,
no, I mean, not as long as money dominates our politics. I mean, there's no way that it gets balanced out. Now, fortunately, there are some wealthy people.
It's unfortunate, Dr. Rosen, that we've run out of time. But as always, great stuff.
We got to go to
a break. Got to go to a break. We'll be right back.